is clipped to the waist of her skirt. She smiles.
Mr. Smith?
Yes, says Henri.
I'm Annie Hart, the agent from Paradise Realty. We spoke on the phone. I tried calling you earlier, but your phone seemed to be turned off.
Yes, of course. The battery unfortunately died on the way here.
I just hate when that happens, she says, and walks towards us and shakes Henri's hand. She asks me my name, and I tell her, though I am tempted, as I always am, to just say, 4. As Henri signs the lease, she asks me how old I am, and tells me she has a daughter at the local high school about my age. She's very warm, friendly, and clearly loves to chat. Henri hands the lease back, and the three of us walk into the house. Inside, most of the furniture is covered with white sheets. Those that aren't covered are coated with a thick layer of dust and dead insects. The screens in the windows look brittle to the touch, and the walls are covered with cheap plywood paneling. There are two bedrooms, a modest-sized kitchen with lime green linoleum, one bathroom. The living room is large and rectangular, situated at the front of the house. There's a fireplace in the far corner. I walk through and toss my bag on the bed of the smaller room. There is a huge faded poster of a football player wearing a bright orange uniform. He's in the middle of throwing a pass, and it looks like he's about to get crushed by a massive man in a black and gold uniform. It says, Bernie Kosar, quarterback, Cleveland Browns.
Come say goodbye to Mrs. Hart,
Henri yells from the living room. Mrs. Hart is standing at the door with Henri. She tells me I should look for her daughter at school, that maybe we could be friends. I smile and say yes, that would be nice. After she leaves, we immediately start unpacking the truck. Depending on how quickly we leave a place, we either travel very lightly, meaning the clothes on our back, Henri's laptop, and the intricately carved Lorik chest that goes everywhere with us. Or we bring a few things, usually Henri's extra computers and equipment, which he uses to set up a security perimeter and search the web for news and events that might be related to us. This time, we have the chest, the two high-powered computers, 4 TV monitors, and 4 cameras. We also have some clothes, though not many of the clothes we wore in Florida are appropriate for life in Ohio. Henri carries the chest to his room, and we lug all of the equipment into the basement, where he'll set it up, so no visitors will see it. Once everything is inside, he starts placing the cameras and turning on the monitors.
We won't have the internet here until the morning, but if you want to go to school tomorrow, I can print all of your new documents for you.
If I stay, will I have to help you clean this place and finish the setup?
Yes.
Then I'll go to school, I say.
Then you better get a good night's sleep.
Chapter 4. Another new identity. Another new school. I've lost track of how many there have been over the years. 15? 20? Always a small town. A small school. Always the same routine. New students draw attention. Sometimes I question our strategy of sticking to the small towns because it's hard, almost impossible, to go unnoticed. But I know Henri's rationale. It is impossible for them to go unnoticed as well. The school is 3 miles away from our house. Henri drives me in the morning. It's smaller than most of the others I've attended, and is unimpressive looking. One story, long and low-slung. A mural of a pirate with a knife between his teeth covers the outside wall beside the front door.
So you're a pirate now, Henri says beside me.
It looks like it, I reply.
You know the drill, he says.
This ain't my first rodeo.
Don't show your intelligence. It'll make them resent you.
Wouldn't dream of it.
Don't stand out or draw too much attention.
Just a fly on the wall.
And don't hurt anybody. You are far stronger than they are.
I know.
Most importantly, always be ready. Ready to leave at a moment's notice. What's in your backpack?
5 days' worth of dried fruit and nuts, spare socks and thermal underwear, rain jacket, a handheld GPS, a knife disguised as a pen.
On you at all times.
He takes a deep breath.
And keep an eye out for signs. Your legacies are going to appear any day now. Hide them at all costs, and call me immediately.
I know, Henri.
Any day, John, he reiterates. If your fingers start to disappear, or if you start to float or shake violently, if you lose muscular control, or begin to hear voices even when nobody is talking, anything at all, you call.
I pat my bag. Got my phone right here.
I'll be waiting here after school. Good luck in there, kiddo,
he says. I smile at him. He is 50 years old, which means he was 40 when we arrived. Being his age made for a harder transition. He still speaks with a strong Lorik accent that is often mistaken for French. It was a good alibi in the beginning, so he named himself Henri, and he has stuck with it ever since, just changing his last name to match mine. Off I go to rule the school, I say.
Be good. I walk towards the building.
As is the case with most high schools, there are crowds of kids hanging around outside. They're divided into their cliques, the jocks and the cheerleaders, the band kids carrying instruments, the brains in their glasses with their textbooks and blackberries, the stoners off to one side, oblivious to everyone else. One kid, gangly with thick glasses, stands alone. He's wearing a black NASA t-shirt and jeans and can't weigh more than 100 pounds. He has a handheld telescope and is scanning the sky, which is mostly obscured by clouds. I notice a girl taking pictures, moving easily from one group to the next. She's shockingly beautiful, with straight blonde hair past her shoulders, ivory skin, high cheekbones, and soft blue eyes. Everyone seems to know her and says hello to her, and no one objects to her taking their picture. She sees me, smiles, and waves. I wonder why and turn to see if someone is behind me. There are two kids discussing math homework, but no one else. I turn back around. The girl walks towards me, smiling. I've never seen a girl so good-looking, much less spoken to one, and I've definitely never had one wave and smile as if we were friends. I'm immediately nervous and start blushing, but I'm also suspicious, as I've been trained to be. As she nears me, she lifts the camera and starts snapping pictures. I raise my hands to block my face. She lowers the camera and smiles. Don't be shy. I'm not. Just trying to protect your lens. My face might break it. She laughs. With that scowl, it might. Try smiling. I smile. Slightly. I'm so nervous I feel like I'm going to explode. I can feel my neck burning, my hands getting warm. That's not a real smile, she says teasingly. A smile involves showing your teeth? I smile broadly, and she takes pictures. I usually don't allow anyone to take my picture. If it ended up on the internet or in a newspaper, it would make finding me much easier. The two times it happened, Henri was furious, got hold of the pictures, and destroyed them. If he knew I was doing this now, I'd be in huge trouble. I can't help it, though. This girl is so pretty and so charming. As she's taking my picture, a dog comes running up to me. It's a beagle with tan floppy ears, white legs and chest, a slender black body. He's thin and dirty, as if he's been living on his own.